understand what the problem is here.
With Carmichael Dave, Katie Christensen, and Nate Goodyear.
New morning, team.
Put the top down. Rev your engine.
Say, what goes on this morning?
Welcome to the drive.
I don't know if I want to say, wow, I really respect that about you, or if I want to say, gosh, that is so stupid.
Come on, man. Wake the up. The drive.
He needs to shut his mouth.
Here we go. Dave, Katie, and Nate.
That keg is almost tapped.
Yes.
And they're going to get every last drop out of it.
Broadcasting live from the Coors Light Studios. Coors Light, with great beer comes great responsibility. Now the drive continues with Dave, Katie, and Nate.
All right, it's 8:05.
At an error.
It's about 8:006.
00.
Matt Barrows will join us in about 4 minutes. Hey, also, bottom of the hour, let's look at, I don't know, my word of the day today is unpack. I just realized
you've been nailing that, yeah.
I've been saying unpack a lot, talking about this interview. Let's unpack all the information over the weekend about the new Kings coach interviews that are coming up. Two, if not three, additional names.
So many names. They're so disorganized.
There's no vision at all. I don't understand it. There's interviewing everybody. Really makes me angry.
Still waiting for the call, guys.
Jeez.
I'll interview.
Oh, I think that would be, honestly,
I would want to do it just so I knew what an NBA interview
was
like. I think that'd be so cool.
What a great idea for a story to, like, whether it's radio or TV or print, to actually roll through a real NBA coaching interview, and you get to make your presentation. You're not going to get the job, of course. It's a joke. But
what if you did?
Oh, my God, wouldn't that be great? But what are you asked? What's the back and forth like? What is it? Who's in the room?
Mm-hmm. See, we used to run a little system.
Is there a physical challenge?
I'm working on that. I'm working on getting a coach that has been in plenty of those.
Yes, that would be a blast.
Yeah, I mean, just
sure
for that
differ.
Insight alone. Because, you know, obviously, I think coaching interviewing now is so different than it was like 10 years ago. You come in now and it's like a PowerPoint presentation.
Well, yeah, 10 years ago you could walk and say, who's your best player? We're going to give them the ball and clear
right,
everyone
exactly.
out.
Exactly. And oh, by the way, my name is so-and-so and I played in the NBA for this long, right? But I think now when you look at some of these coaches that have been in the league for a long time, maybe as assistants and haven't ever gotten that head coaching job, you have to start wondering, is the interview bad? Are they just not prepared?
Brian Shaw was a guy who was brought up for a long time as a guy that reportedly interviewed horribly.
Yeah.
And, you know, you start thinking back to, like, if you
like,
saw
how could it be? Is it just flop sweat all
no,
over
I'm
the place?
I'm thinking the movie
the
Step Brothers.
Stuttering and, yeah, like they fart in the interview.
Right, exactly. You bring in your buddy. You're hanging out. You're doing something. You got your Walkman in.
Show up in a tuxedo.
Wonder if they get asked questions just, like, out of the blue, like, potential coach finishes up, like, talking about how his defensive philosophy and then – it's like Bull Durham, sports movie or rom-com.
Yeah, is a hot dog a sandwich?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite brand of peanut butter? Which, by the way, put that poll out yesterday. Yeah. You can check that out. Favorite brand of peanut butter, also crunchy or creamy?
Oh, creamy. I can't do the chunky peanut butter.
Nate?
It's crunchy, man.
Yeah, I'm a creamy guy.
Really?
I
overwhelmed
that.
Here.
Overwhelmed by the numbers. We have to bring in Matt to really make it make sense,
have
I guess.
That texture, man.
Yeah. Final comment today.
Creamy.
From well, that's 3-1 creamy.
Yep, you just got destroyed.
When
that's
told,
a shock.
George Karl said about DeMarcus Cousins to Aileen Voisin in the Sacramento Bee, DeMarcus Cousins needs players around him that are better fits. You could tell at the end of last year that Rudy and DeMarcus didn't work. We added some
took
pieces.
Took him that long?
Right. We added some pieces last summer, but we had too many guards. I kept telling Mike Brotz, Collison, McLemore, and Bellinelli are too similar. Trade one of them because you can't keep three shooting guards happy.
So were you playing Marco Bellinelli to excess because you were hoping that he would play himself
showcase.
Into a trade? Or were you just deciding that, hey, I'm going to go with this guy because, you know what, he was the first one I called, so now I got to stick with it.
Maybe that's the question. Or maybe he was going in order of who was getting paid the most.
Yeah, I kind of asked for a follow-up
because that
there,
matters.
Huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. Let's
because is that not accurate? Is that not an accurate statement?
What, that you can't?
These guys are too similar, can't keep three,
well,
two
Well, then you have Seth Curry
happy.
Sitting on the bench.
He addressed that,
and
right?
I wanted to play him more. I just couldn't.
Just couldn't. There were other people in there.
You absolutely could. I mean, I get it in the beginning.
How much does money play a part? It shouldn't. I agree. It shouldn't. But how much does money play a part?
Doesn't he say? No, I think it comes down to you. You have a preference for a player. I remember, you know,
Marco was making the most money. So, I mean, I think that's an interesting point.
I remember Coach Carl talking in the beginning of the season about how phenomenal of a shooter Marco Bellinelli was and how impressive he was. And then fast forward to even 20 games into the season where you've given this guy a shot. And at this point, you should be able to shoot yourself out of a slump. He never got out of that slump the entire season, but he was ridden like one of those bulls at the Country Western Bar, like incessantly.
I know.
Let's shift gears.
You got to stop at some point, right?
On that note, let's shift gears and talk. Speaking of bulls at the Country Bar. Now, when I think of that, I think of our good friend from the Sacramento Bee, Matt Barrows. Matt, it's Dave, Katie, and Nate. Thanks so much for joining us this early on the program. How are you, buddy? You recovered from the weekend?
Yeah, I'm barely recovered. It's a long weekend these days with the draft. You see one day. Now they stretch it into 3 days. But, yeah, doing well after the big draft weekend.
Are you watching, like, I mean, are you watching the whole thing? Do you kind of time it out when the Niners are going to pick and just show up for that? I mean, it's got to be a long weekend for you.
Yeah, a lot of blogs. I mean, they had, for example, in the sixth round on Saturday, they had, you know, three picks in very quick succession. And, you know, people expect to read about each of these. So there are flurries of activity, and then there are some doldrums as well. But, yeah, you know, this is a Trent Baalke draft. He usually picks, you know, double-digit numbers of selections. So there is a lot to write about.
Well, let's talk first off with the first-round pick, DeForest Buckner out of Oregon. We had Eric Armstead on Friday. He was obviously ecstatic about this. Chip Kelly, Oregon player. Was this a Chip Kelly-influenced pick, do you think, or was this a coincidence that he happened to be an Oregon kid?
Yeah, I mean, I really think it's a marriage pick. I mean, it checks off a lot of boxes for what Trent Baalke has liked in the past, and obviously there's a connection to Chip Kelly and his defensive line coach. Recruited him out of Hawaii back in 2011. They recruited a lot of basketball players back then. They looked for size and length and athletic ability, and then they would bring these guys in and basically find a position for them after they arrived in Oregon. And Buckner obviously went to defensive line along with Eric Armstead. And really, the gang's all back together. They even signed Alex Balducci, who was the nose tackle at Oregon, with those two guys after the draft. So that entire Oregon defensive line that played in 2014 is now on the 49ers roster.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out. Another guy that the Niners got in the first round, they traded up to get Joshua Garnett, who, Matt, from what I've seen, basically, number one, they wanted to keep him away from Seattle. But there's some questions as to whether he's the type of player that could fit in Chip Kelly's scheme. What do you see out of Garnett?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Chip Kelly scheme is going to require blockers who can, you know, hit moving targets, who can get out in space, who move well and who can function in his own blocking scheme. And Garnett at Stanford obviously played in a, you know, very Jim Harbaugh-like power blocking scheme. He ran a 5.32 second 40-yard dash, which is slow even for an offensive lineman. But he also made a lot of plays on the or blocks on the second level. He was their pulling guard, so that suggests that he can get out in space in the block. And obviously, Chip Kelly thinks that as well. He was very attentive to Garnett at the Stanford Pro Day back in March. Garnett worked out for the 49ers again last month, so he's obviously somebody that caught Chip Kelly's eye. So this was the real kind of counterintuitively. Buckner wasn't, I don't think, as much a Chip Kelly pick as Garnett was. He's actually somebody that that Chip Kelly recruited, decided to go to Stanford instead of Oregon, obviously. But obviously somebody who Chip Kelly has had an eye on for a long time. And, you know, when you trade up into the first round for a guy, especially a guard, you expect him to start from day one. So that'll be the expectation for Joshua Garnett.
As we talked to Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee on KHTK, when the 49ers made that move, many thought they were trading up for a quarterback. They grabbed Garnett, and that move, You know, for the most part, I saw had a lot of people scratching heads. You shed some light on understanding why they did it, but do you think they gave up too much?
Well, I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, I think it's really interesting that, you know, the 49ers today are going to pick up the fifth-year option for safety, Eric Reed, who was their first-round pick back in 2013. They traded up, I think, 13 spots to get him. And so you're giving up a lot of draft capital to get a guy, and then you're possibly saying goodbye to him in free agency after a few years. Is that going to be the pattern with Garnett as well? They haven't paid big money for guards in the past, so there seems to be this two opposing thoughts going on. You're giving up draft capital, a second, a fourth, and a sixth-round pick to go up and get Garnett, but you haven't paid for guards in the past. You've let guys like Mike Iupati and Alex Boone go in free agency, and you've kind of gone cheap at that position. So what's going to happen, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road with Garnett? Are they just going to let him go, or are they going to keep him and sort of develop him as one of the better guards in the league? So in that regard, we'll have to see, but it's something to keep an eye on moving forward.
Matt, when you look at the draft, obviously it's long, and you know, the 49ers pick up 11 guys, and we'll talk about Buckner and excuse me, Garnett, but when you look at the rest of the guys that they add to this roster, is there anyone that maybe either surprised you or you looked at it and you're like, wow, they got a steal with this one?
Yeah, I really think that they got a steal in the fifth round with this guy, Ronald Blair, who probably fell to that point because he played at Appalachian State, mm-hmm. and his level of competition may not have been great, and he's a little bit odd sized. He's 6'2", 280 pounds, and you know, not quite an outside pass rusher, not quite an inside guy in the trenches. But he was very productive at Appalachian State. Was a 2-year team captain. People sort of gravitated to him. The defense there very much rotated around him. So he shows a lot of promise, I think. Again, it'll be interesting to see how the defensive coaches use him. But, boy, he was just so productive, such a tenacious player that you can kind of envision him getting into the mix somehow, even as a rookie. And it'll be interesting to see how he's used by the 49ers.
On that note, I'm curious, on the flip side, is there anyone that has you scratching your head a little bit?
Yeah, they took back-to-back cornerbacks, mm-hmm. Will Redmond, in the third round, who's coming back from an ACL injury. And then in the next round, they took Rashard Robinson, a very thin-framed cornerback out of LSU. So two cornerbacks back-to-back. And then Robinson hasn't played since 2014. And then he was booted off the team that season. Hmm. That seems awfully risky when you had some other needs in Devontae Booker. For example, Sacramento's mm-hmm. own Devontae Booker went to the Denver Broncos just a couple of picks later. To me, that was a need for the 49ers running back. I know that they got somebody in Kelvin Taylor in the sixth round, but Booker is being looked at as a possible starter, very versatile guy, can play all three downs. They also had looked at Kenneth Dixon, another running back from Louisiana Tech, in the run-up to the draft. He was taken actually one pick after Robinson by the Baltimore Ravens. So those two picks will be monitored, shall we say, in coming years to see how they do versus how Rashard Robinson does. And, you know, Robinson is a bit of a gamble. I mean, obviously the 49ers feel like he's got good potential and might turn into a wonderful cover corner. But risky pick, a guy who couldn't stay on the field, couldn't stay in school at LSU, and suddenly you're taking him at a fairly prominent spot.
Matt Barris of the Sacramento Bee joining us on KHDK. You know, we're forgetting about quarterback of the future, Jeff Driskel, who Matt, I correct me if I'm wrong, I think first 49er quarterback out of Louisiana Tech since Tim Rattay.
Yeah, baby.
And they grab him. Talk a little bit, if you know, what do you know about him? But more importantly, do we now, for all intents and purposes, believe Colin Kaepernick will start the year now that the Broncos did what they did?
Yeah, and it's really dependent on the Broncos, obviously, trading up to get Paxton Lynch in the first round. And John Elway basically saying, or not basically saying, yeah. saying flat out that the Kaepernick saga in Denver, at least, is now dead. Trent Baalke, his counterpart, would not, however, say that Kaepernick is not going to be traded. He's been asked that question several times in the last few weeks and won't put it to bed. So until that happens, I think it's still... it's Jon Snow like in terms of it's life. It's lying on the table, but you kind of think that it still could be turned back into life at some point. Until the Jets add a quarterback, you know they're still the one team that's outstanding now that doesn't have a real quarterback for the future. They've got a lot of possibilities, perhaps, but nobody who's sort of locked into that starting spot. Until they re-sign Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think that door is left a little bit ajar. But, it's looking more and more likely, and I think Colin Kaepernick is becoming more and more resigned to being on the 49ers this year.
Matt Barrow's joining us on KHTK. So overall, Matt, early returns, how do you think they did? They fill their needs? They get some good players? What do you got?
Yeah, I'm going with the solid B, right in the meaty part of the grading curve there. they addressed, I thought, their two biggest areas of need, which were the defensive line. Two guys there, DeForest Buckner and Ronald Blair, the guy I talked about earlier. And then the offensive line, and Josh Garnett, and later in a couple of tackles, John Theus and Fon Cooper, both from the SEC. So they've added some bulk to those positions. I thought, if there's a critique, they could have added a little bit more pop to the skill positions. I mean, they basically, at the very end of the sixth round, added their quarterback, their running back, and their wide receiver. That's not exactly a commitment to scoring a lot of points. I think the overall thought is that, Chip Kelly, his addition is going to help in that regard. Yeah. And Trent Baalke's job was to bulk up those lines and the trenches. And so they accomplished that early on in the draft.
Anthony Davis tweeted out, "Que sera, sera," after they made their offensive line pick. What is going on there with Anthony Davis?
Yeah, you know what? I wish I knew. I just cannot explain it. Here's a guy that's been talking about coming back to the 49ers for months and months now. But the first step in that is to file for reinstatement with the NFL, and he just hasn't done that. And neither side, neither Davis nor his agent nor the 49ers will explain to anybody, and this is, typical 49ers keeping everybody in the dark, including their fan base, why that hasn't happened. And it's just very odd why that process at least hasn't started. They can't even trade him until he does this. So I think, like Colin Kaepernick, it's looking more and more likely like the 49ers won't have Davis on the roster, that he can't sort of coexist with Trent Baalke. So, a trade seems likely at some point or cutting him or moving on. But, again, they control his contractual rights, so he needs to be first in the league and then back on the 49ers before they can do anything with him. And it looks, for all intents and purposes, through the draft, as if they've moved on, or at least have a lot of guys now competing for that spot.
What's coming up under your byline at sacb.com this week?
Well, I'm going to take a longer look at the draft and kind of go into more of those thoughts and analysis of those picks and where they fit in on the roster. I think that's going to be an interesting point. And I'm not sure if there's a real answer yet, but there's some potential answers. And, when you've got an 11-man draft class and then they added another 11 guys, after the draft, undrafted free agents, I think that means that there are going to be some guys on the roster now who go. And so it'll be interesting to see which of those guys might be cut or who's got a fight on his hands in the spring and in training camp.
Always appreciate the time, Matty. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Anytime, guys. Talk to you soon.
Take care. That is Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee. Check him out at sacbee.com. He's also on the Twitter machine as well. Before we break, 10K a day giveaway, word of the hour. You don't hear it in mono. You hear it in?
Stereo.
Yeah, stereo. You said that quietly.
I cheated on that one. That's why.
Oh, did
I was
you?
Kind of,
oh.
I was waiting for Katie to make a guess, and then yeah. I didn't want to just let it linger.
Still no. with us, Katie?
I had nothing.
Nothing.
For you on
had nothing.
That.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Text in stereo to.
I was
eight.
Thinking, like, you know, mono, like mononucleosis. Health problems.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no, I can understand
you got
that.
Mono, you got pneumonia or something.
Yeah, I have no idea.
80787. Text in stereo by the end of the hour, and you will be in the old drawing to win $1,000. Text. And data rates, of course, do apply, and you will get a text back saying you did it right, and you'll be entered in the grand prize contest. You could win $25,000. Yeah. That's right. We'll do a Raider draft tomorrow, recap everything. I think a lot more. We did the Niners today. I think there's a lot more to unpack with the Oakland Raiders. And, yeah, I am all the way till 9. There's a lot more to do with them. You know, let's be really honest.
Their draft matters.
Yes, that's exactly mm-hmm. right. The Raiders draft matters because they're a franchise that matters right now. The 49ers matter in the sense that, I might be a fan. It's going to be fun to watch them play.
They exist.
And stranger things have yeah. happened, but there's really not a lot of optimism going in with the 49ers. The Raiders, on the other hand,
there's so much drama surrounding them right now, too.
Yeah, drama, just not good drama. Yeah. They're just a crappy franchise. We'll take a break. Hey, when we come back, let's finish up. We promised you all day we'd talk about the new names thrown out there in the Kings coaching search. There's a few of them. Hey, we'll unpack that next. It's the home of the Kings, Sports 1140 KHDK. All right, according to them, those people, the sources, Sacramento Kings coaching search continues to expand. Here's who we know has either been interviewed or contacted or both. In no particular order, by the way. Sam Mitchell, Vinny Del Negro, Mike Woodson, Kevin McHale. That came out over the weekend that Patrick Ewing, David Blatt, Vittori Messina, Nate McMillan, they will be contacted and interviewed. Also, Elston Turner reportedly will be interviewed. Mark Jackson, according to Jason Jones of the Bee, this is something I hadn't heard. Mark Jackson, not that makes a difference, but I just hadn't heard Mark Jackson's name in there until Jason Jones in his column yesterday. And then Jeff Hornacek apparently also perhaps on the radar. Four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11. 11 that we know of. I don't know if maybe Corliss Williamson's going to get an interview in there as well.
It's safe to say there will probably be a few more than that, right?
I think we're going to end up probably somewhere between 13 and 15.
Okay. I understand the trepidation behind, that's a lot of names, man. What, are you just going to interview everyone? There's no plan there, whatever. There are also, listen, there are some duds in that group, but there are at least four or five really good names to where I wouldn't want them predetermining which one they want.
Right.
I would want to hear from all of those guys and choose between them.
Yeah, so here's the thing. You know, when you go into something like this, you probably have a couple guys that you're, like, your preconceived, you know, notion going in.
The guys you really, really want?
I would really want these guys. But at the same time, I don't want anyone to make up their mind before they hear other people.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of, it's been so long since this team has conducted a proper coaching search, and guess what? They can't fire another coach in a year and a half. They can't fire
another. Yes, they can.
They absolutely can. It's possible.
I know
but
what
you cannot
saying.
Do
you're
it.
Right. You're
if
right.
you're going to achieve what you need to do, the one thing that you need to do is establish some stability within this organization. And I would rather them interview everybody under the sun than say, oh, I've got a couple guys that I really like, and I'm really just going to see if they're interested. And if they're interested, I'm just going to offer him the job.
Yeah, they need to pick something that they're willing to fail with. And that's not to say that they're going to fail, but I feel like a lot of these decisions have kind of been, all right, let's do it. And then when things start to go bad, there's been a lot of reactionary type of moves. That's slowed down over the last couple of months, especially since Vlade's been installed with a little bit more power.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about having the conviction of picking something and say, you know what, if this does fail, that's what we're riding with.
Right.
It's the same with Vlade going to Vivek and being like, listen, if you're going to hire me to be that guy, Let me be that guy. Let me fail on my own accord if that's what it takes.
And this is where hope turns to faith for
me. I keep saying fail. Like, I'm not expecting failure, but you have to know going in, it's a possibility. You have to be confident
with
that
person.
Give
me the rope.
Exactly.
Give me the rope to hang myself with. And this is where Vlade, actually, the GM, president of basketball operations, whatever you want to call him, he gets to make the decision. And this is the first true coaching search for this team since Paul Westfall way, way long, long ago.
And do you even count that? Because I think the perception is that Paul, even though he was qualified, was hired as a budgetary thing, much like the Jimmer Fredette draft day.
You know, those were the Maloof days. I don't know. I do know this.
Paul was a legit coach, and he got hired.
I like Paul. I fell in love with Paul Westfall when he was with the Suns in the 90s. I thought,
and you've seen his video of him playing horse in the 70s.
You're damn right.
I mean, it's classic.
You're damn right. So I it's so tough to check out. Here's when you look at what's going on. All I care about is them having the coach they want before the draft. Really, I want the coach involved in that process. So, and that's not for a while. I believe they know who they want. They have an idea as to who they want. They're bringing in everyone else.
If they didn't, I would have actually more of an issue with that than having an idea right now while they're still conducting interviews.
Well, I think it's a couple of things. It's number one, okay, well, we have an early favorite, but there's no harm in talking to these other people, and maybe they come in and blow us away. Maybe there's something we haven't looked at. And then the other part of it is, we talked about this before the season when we ranked attractive positions in the NBA, the Kings were at or near the bottom. You know, it was between the Kings and the Suns. So the other part of it has to be, okay, we don't want to go through this thing where we put all our eggs in one basket for one guy, and he says no. So my question I'd pose to you guys is this. Let's say out of that list, each of you make your top three. You each make your top three candidates who you think you'd want if you were the GM. Would you rather have your number one choice, but you have to sell him on coming here? Or would you rather have your number two or number three choice, but they're chomping at the bit? They know what they
number
can do.
Number one.
Katie?
Oh, I don't know that I have an opinion either way, to be honest. Like, I really don't, because I can see both sides of things.
It's 8:40. You got 13 minutes to figure one out.
You want your coach, obviously, to want the job, right? And you want them to be excited about it. But isn't there also a side to it where it's like, okay, if maybe one of your top candidates is also, I don't know, guess what, a top candidate for a couple other teams? Doesn't that kind of tell you that that's a good thing?
Yes.
Do you want somebody that, you know,
you want someone in demand. You want someone with options.
Yeah, and even if they have options and they end up choosing you, that's kind of a good thing, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
Instead of someone that maybe that's their only option. They're like, of course I want it because it's their only option.
Now, Dave, do you think that if you did have to sell this candidate on the job, you think that affects them once the whistle blows, once the ball is tipped? And that's where I'm with you. Like, I'd rather have the guy that's eager to be here in some senses, but all things being equal, I think once the ball's tipped off, he's got a job as an NBA coach, and they're going to do it the same.
I think probably so. I think once the job is accepted, once the contract is signed,
it's on.
It is on. And what Katie said, you have to get this right. And no matter who it is, and I know this sounds silly because we said this a year ago or a little over a year with George Karl, but you can't fire whoever it is. They have to know they're going to have 2 to 3 years. You know, they're basically going to have to.
I would say 3 to 5. I wouldn't even say 2 years. I don't think that's the right path.
I hope. I mean, I hope if they win 20 games next year.
But do you have faith in it?
I don't. Because if they win 20 games or 25 or 30 games over the next 2 years, you're telling me we're not thinking, remember, they win 30 games over the next 2 years. Not only do you have the coach situation.
They better win 34, at least.
That's the question. You also have a free agent in DeMarcus Cousins.
You got me
Cousins.
Really depressed about the future, since we put it that way.
We'll talk a little bit more about the whole coaching search and maybe even narrow down who we think would be the right fit. Because there's a lot of names.
So you're not going to give me time for my rant then, I guess.
We're not going to give you time for your rant. You want to do it next?
No.
No?
Yes, you want of course roll? I do.
Okay.
You know, here in about 30 seconds, you're going to have like 4 or 5 minutes to fire it off.
Great point.
Katie's you want to just do it during
the break?
During the break.
Katie's angry. She's very angry. Somebody wrote something about her, and she didn't like it.
Some faceless troll.
Pretty sure the troll has a face, but we'll talk about that next on the Drive Sports 1140 KHTK. It is the Drive Sports 1140 KHTK. Final segment. Yeah, like Damien said, lowdown coming up at noon.
Grant Napier this afternoon. I think this is their best one, Dave.
Yeah?
I do. I mean, it's not their most elaborate, but it gets in, gets out, rocks your face off.
Abso-freaking-lutely. 44-11-40 on the text. Do you guys have a pick, by the way? Do you have a favorite from all those coaches I mentioned?
I like McHale.
McHale? Katie?
McHale's Navy.
Yeah, I think in all the names, I think McHale and Vinny Del Negro are kind of ones that I'm looking at as like, okay, this could be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, selfishly, I think Kevin McHale's a good coach, but I also want that guy to be part of our job for at least the next year or two.
Just covering him?
Yeah. Yeah, having his press conferences. Sure. Just Kevin McHale is a Hall of Fame personality, too.
Yes, he is.
I want that to be part of our lives.
It's going to make
here locally, yeah, not just from afar on NBA TV.
It would make my job pretty interesting because, you know, there's certain things where you have limited access anyway, and you've got to get the information you need, mm-hmm, and he will cut a media availability so short, like he'll answer two questions and be like, oh, guess what? I'm leaving. It's like, okay, we'll talk
see you later.
I'm done.
Deuces. I'm out. And Torrey Messina and David Blatt coming in for interviews.
I like a Torrey Messina, too, just from the sense that I would like the idea of doing something new. I mean, he's shown he can coach at some level. I don't know if that's necessarily the best fit for this team right now, but if they were to hire him, I'd say, all right, do a little bit differently, see what this guy has.
I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with that. I'd
take him over David Blatt.
I mean, that's the thing. We attach our – well, David Blatt has a history of working well with powerful superstars.
Yeah, you have a point there.
honestly, people become attached to coaches, mm-hmm, and it's like a guy like Torrey Messina. I don't know.
Right.
I have
no idea. I love his name.
Yeah. People are like, Messina, man, mm-hmm, that's the guy. Well, but why? Because he coached under this guy, mm-hmm, and he did well in Europe, but I don't know if that's – I don't have a track record to base – coaches that cut their teeth in Europe.
Right. We don't know any different from Derek Fisher or Brian Shaw.
Sure, I have no idea.
I don't know about that, though, because when you think about coaches that cut their teeth overseas, like in Europe, what about Mike D'Antoni?
That's like the guy.
I mean, he did a phenomenal job, and he really got his start and did really well in the Italian league.
Yeah, but you're right. But I think a lot of people put him on Steve Nash. You know, more
because he had great players.
Yeah, well, one great player that
I don't
fit
know
his
Amari
system.
Sotomayor and Steve Nash that duo together, and I think a lot of people forget how important Sean Marion was to that team.
That was a good
he
trio.
Was the highest paid player on that team.
You're right. My overarching point is that when Mike D'Antoni
like
coached elsewhere, well, I don't either. I don't like any of my points, but we got to talk for 3 hours.
He didn't have success.
He
elsewhere.
Didn't adjust right. his system to the players right. around him.
Now, granted, much like, and it can go whether you're a foreign trained coach or a girl coach or a boy coach or a this coach or that
coach.
You can't make you don't want to make sweeping stereotypes or statements about anyone, including something like that. Where I don't maybe there's been two foreign coaches in the NBA and they've both been horrible. Well, that doesn't mean that every single coach that's mm-hmm. cut their teeth in Europe is going to be terrible. It's so much laid on the individual.
No, the point is we don't know.
But
that doesn't do anything more for him.
Thank you.
Right.
Exactly.
Than 10 years of Luke Walton being Steve Kerr's assistant does for him.
Woodson and Del Negro to me are very, they check some boxes. And I'm not necessarily saying they're all perfect boxes, mm-hmm. but. They check some boxes there. I think that's very, very interesting. McHale, Del Negro, and Mike Woodson.
I think what you get out of McHale that you don't get out of those other two, aside from the personality, I feel like Kevin McHale's going to bring a more exciting style. Vinny Del Negro and Mike Woodson.
I'm just worried about defense with that.
Yes.
I really am.
Vinny Del Negro and Mike Woodson are good coaches,
sure.
but they're also just kind of bland. It's a type of thing where you hear the hire and you're like, whatever. Maybe they'll be good. Okay. Kevin McHale's going to be exciting, at least.
I'll tell you what. I mean, we base his what he would be like off of his success in Houston, and we can all agree that he got jobbed there, mm-hmm. you know, this past season. But at the same time, we don't have the personnel right now to play how they played in Houston.
No.
They took mainly three-point shots and layups. Like, we don't really have that right now. And Dwight Howard is not He's not an offensive player in my mind. He's someone that can stand 2 feet within the basket, and he's athletic.
Before we go, Katie, you're very mad
yes.
about something.
I thought you were doing the sweeping statement and
no.
stereotypes. So there's a website, and I get these all the time, various different things. Someone tweeted me last week. Apparently this website did the sexiest women in the WNBA all time.
Okay.
And I made that list, apparently.
Did you just cut the
nice.
Music?
Did yeah, I did. I just gave you to cut the music. And just like
serious.
I'm about to say, cut the crap to this
whatever.
D-bag, whoever. And that's the great thing about it. I'm
right,
not even
going
to say what site it is because I don't want to give this guy the credit of the clicks. And guess what? I'm assuming this is a man, but he didn't put his name on the article, whatever. There's a
we
number.
We have to
of,
give the site. It's dumbstupidface.org.
Yes. So I just want to read what he said
okay.
about me. He mentions my 3.2 points per game and 60% career free throw percentage as just not happening in the WNBA. Those types of stats take hard work, long legs, pretty eyes, and a large male fan base.
Yeah.
Fortunately, Katie Christensen had all that and more. And by more, I mean great hair and a toned stomach,
not
which
babe.
I don't know how the hell he knows that.
Well,
but then he goes on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe
but then he goes
to
on to he goes on to go ahead and, you know, just completely obliterate the facts by saying that I'm an Oregon native, which
no,
I am not.
No, you're not.
Now, to be
dumbass.
Fair. Pretty
almost
damn
Oregon,
close.
And
right?
then on top of it, apparently I was a sexual staple in the WNBA community since entering the league in 2002.
Oh, stop.
Oh,
no
yeah,
clapping.
Sorry.
No clapping at this.
No clapping audience.
And remains active
what
in
does
her
that mean?
Craft.
What does that mean, a sexual staple?
Apparently I sold all kinds of tickets because I was
oh.
a sexual staple.
Okay.
By the way,
I remember that.
I'm just saying, look
sex
at my
appeal.
Look at my player cards, my playing cards, and
yeah.
me actually playing. There was nothing sexy about me on the floor. I don't
I
care what
say,
the hell
like,
you say.
You don't strike me as a hot player.
No, I'm not.
No.
I mean, this
brutal,
is kind of an
oogie
conversation, but eye of the beholder. Eye of
but
the beholder.
I remain active in my craft, which he says is being hot. In my work with the Sacramento Kings as the sideline reporter.
Why is that? Don't ding that.
Because fans don't want to hear, quote, we may be the worst team in the league this year from an ugly person with a microphone.
Well, it's
you
true.
Know what?
Jim Gray ain't doing your
here's,
job.
Here's one of my things about this.
So
I don't give a crap about if someone thinks I'm sexy or not.
You know and you're easy to look at for a lot of people.
I don't care.
You're aware
it makes
of that.
No difference to me. But if you're going to just blatantly obliterate someone and their talents by saying, you know what, you don't have talent. You're just sexy.
Good thing you're
well,
pretty
your number
girl.
Person, your number one person on the list is Lauren Jackson, who, by the way, is one of the greatest female players to ever play the game. Phenomenal player.
She was also
guess
in the
what?
In the Naked magazine.
Guess
too.
What?
Yes.
I was her least favorite person to go up against. You want to know why I averaged 3.2 points a game?
You punked her ass.
Jackass. Because I absolutely made a name for myself defending people in the WNBA. And guess what? I'm sorry if that's it's not pretty on the floor, but thanks for being pretty. I don't know what to say to this guy other than put your name on it and go ahead and come on and have a conversation
yeah,
with us.
Yeah, he put his name on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he should smile more often.
God,
was
I was,
like, yeah.
yeah, seriously. You know what? How about those toned legs and a cut stomach there, Nate? You take that's your title here. Thanks for prettying up our show, Nate.
I'm the body. Doesn't even the guy know? Didn't I even know that?
Your points are all valid and good. It just, from my perspective, I'm like, I want someone to insult me for being good looking.
No
someday.
Kidding.
Like,
honest, wow. honest engine here. I mean,
I'm the ugly sideline reporter.
Yeah, you are the. That's
yeah,
okay. Never mind. Just forget about it.
That's it. You're gonna leave everybody hanging.
Yes, yes, I am.
Okay, all right. Thanks.
Sorry, we're done with it.
Hey, our show produced by and run by the lovely and talented Matt George, who does.
Mm-hmm.
Sexy up the program. Nate Goodyear. Katie Christensen, you feel better now?
No.
No? You
no,
carry
I,
this
think
over
we,
to tomorrow?
I think we ruined it for
you. Did we ruin it for you?
Yeah.
We were supportive. We had your back.
You're not supportive ever.
We were so.
I'm Carmichael Dave,
you
unfortunately.
Are great.
Well, Jim Rome's next. See you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Sports 1140 KHDK.